Today, we are finishing up the week by furthering our discussion about God in Genesis 1 and verse 1. The Jewish name for God here in the Hebrew language is Elohim, and we've spent the last 4 days defining what the Bible means by Elohim, and I have begun to demonstrate that even though God is one, Elohim moves in a practical way to prove that he is one, not because other gods actually exist, but because in the minds and hearts of people, gods, small g plural, do exist. Down through the ages, people have made up deities. So God knows he is the one and only God, but despite telling us through his word that he alone is God, billions of people have chosen not to believe him. And just before we move back into the biblical text today, I want to point out what the approach is that Elohim takes with us. You know, the God of the Bible sometimes gets the reputation as being too far away, impractical, somehow detached from the life down here in the real world. Many of you would agree with the deists' take on God. He created the universe and set it in motion, gave a moral law, but then just left it to us to manage. Because of moral law, ethical conduct is important to God and to one another as citizens of the world, but deists had little regard for the Bible as the very revelation of who God is. So to you, like the deist, God is out there somewhere, but God is disinterested in this world, and more specifically, God is disinterested in your life. If you live by this perspective, God is not personal. God is not down to earth enough for you. The distance between your life today and God's life is so vast that you live totally disconnected from one another. And this very thought may well have led you or someone you know to deny the existence of God, or God's plural. The distance drove them to atheism like a dagger into your heart and soul. You may have even attempted belief, Christians call it faith, but God seemed unresponsive, and so you gave up. My conversations with a diverse group of people in both the United States and Asia, I've really heard this. It's certainly a popular conviction for young men and women who grew up going to church, kind of accepting the beliefs of their parents, but then just could not make a meaningful connection with God as they went to college and university and left the purview of their families. Once the influence toward God is no longer there, the demands of human existence and a God who appeared to be distant left a gap that got filled with all sorts of different content that caused many men and women to drift away from faith in God. And I know this is a serious concern for many godly parents, meaning moms and dads who have a deeply nurtured faith in God, but who are saddened to see their adult children turn away from God. The so-called generation gap is very often also a God gap. Parents press on in faith and belief while adult children press on towards faithlessness and unbelief or disbelief. And this development in families is very often a thorn in the relational flesh of parents, children, and grandchildren. What is to be done about this? What I want to demonstrate from the use of Elohim as the name for God in Genesis 1, verse 1, is that God does have something to say about this. As I hope you have experienced over the last few days, in our ongoing story, God is definitely aware of the problem that he is interpreted as being non-existent. He gets canceled out by the existence of rival gods, or as being just one of many gods. It is him plus many others. But God is not silent on these convictions that people hold to be true. The very name Elohim proves it. Elohim is used as the first name for God in the Bible because Elohim means the greatest God of all. Why would one God allow this title to be used? Listen, God foreknew that people will worship gods that do not exist. And so in the fourth word of the entire Bible, he writes his name as Elohim, the greatest God of all, so that people will know that he's the God. even though he already knows it about himself. Elohim is used because he wants you to know that he's God. The name Elohim is not used because there are many other gods. There are no other gods. There's only one God. And this has a deep impact on those of you who feel that God is too distant. God is out there somewhere, but God is disinterested in this world, and more specifically, God is disinterested in your life. That is not true. Have you seen this week the length that God goes to in order that you will receive him as the one true God? From the start of the Bible, he sees the conflict coming in your mind and heart, and he attempts to circumvent the objections that you have to him by pursuing you in an intimate way to say, "I am God. Believe in me." That's what the first two of the Ten Commandments are saying. And that is what we're about to watch God do on Monday in 1 Kings. In human experience, we regularly find that the reputation of a person before you meet them is not what the person actually is once you have a face-to-face coffee together. You drove to the cafe thinking you were going to get one person, and instead you found someone completely different. That is how it can be with God. You think of him as being distant and disinterested, but in reality, he has a dominating presence that can make you feel like you're all he's interested in. I'm politely asking those of you who feel totally disconnected from God to consider having coffee with him, as it were, this weekend, or whatever beverage you prefer. After all, God gave you the elements to make them all. Now, we are going to continue our discussion that God is one next week. But for today, I just want to tell you a little more of the story that we've been reading in 1 Kings 16. This will set the stage for an encounter between God, Elohim, and Baal and Asherah that will pick up on Monday. When we left off yesterday, we read in 1 Kings 16:29 and verses 32 to 33, "Now Ahab became king over Israel, and Ahab reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Ahab did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. So he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. Ahab also made the Asherah." So Elohim has given the commands way back in Exodus 20. Worship no other gods or idols. And yet right here, we have a human king leading God's people right smack dab into the middle of idolatry. Yesterday, I described for you Baal and Asherah. Now look what Ahab has done. He built the false god Baal a house, and he put an altar in the house and made an Asherah pole out of the false goddess, and he stuck it in the ground for all of them to worship. So what does Elohim, the one true God, do about this? Like, does he just sit in heaven and do nothing? Is he so distant that he doesn't even care if people worship Baal and Asherah? Absolutely not. In 1 Kings chapter 17 and 18, we meet another important character in this true story. His name is Elijah. E-L-I-J-A-H. Elijah. He's a man of God. That is, he's committed to one God, and he is sent by God to condemn the worship of Baal and Asherah. And listen to this. Elijah means the Lord is God. Wow. With a name like that, it is clear what his mission and life is going to be. God is going to speak and act through this man, Elijah, to demonstrate to Ahab and the people of God that these small gods are non-existent and therefore completely powerless. Now on Monday, when we come back together, we're going to watch a battle between God, Elohim, the one true God, and Baal and Asherah, the two false non-existent gods. It's epic. Up on the peaks of a range of mountains called Carmel, God takes action. I mean severe action to prove himself as the only God. Because God is not silent. He is not distant. He is not impersonal or inactive in the world. So please come back and join me Monday as we sit down on the side of the mountain, as it were, and watch Elohim in action. You're going to love this story. I also want you to enjoy your weekend. And if something that I have said today or this week has captured your attention, drop me an email and tell me about it. And please, this weekend, be in a Bible-believing church on Sunday. Go to church. Now find a church that teaches and practices the gospel. And what is the gospel? It's this. Jesus Christ has died for our sins, and he has been resurrected from the dead, so that all who believe in him by faith will be saved from our sin. And we also will be brought back from the dead to live with God forever. That is the gospel. Sadly, not every church that you will go into this Sunday teaches this, because in many churches, the Bible is not really opened. The Bible is not really taught, such as we teach it here on this broadcast and on many other good Bible teaching programs on this station. So what you want to do is be discerning about what church you go to or what church you bring your family to. Thanks be to God, there are many churches in New England which do preach, teach, and live this gospel. Please find one of them this Sunday. And remember, take some time to check out our Facebook page and also our Twitter feed, along with Instagram, and email me if you would. Karen will be along in a minute with all those details. And then join me again Monday for God Is.